The articles of impeachment will soon be on their way to the U.S. Senate, setting up a trial of the president, likely next week. Newly released documents shed more light on the president's actions and those of his attorney in Ukraine, and Democratic candidates for president debated in Iowa less than a month before the first primary contest. Our question for you this week, what are you paying attention to in the Democratic primary race? If you plan to vote for a Democrat, do you have your mind made up? Are you still watching certain issues to decide, or does it just matter who ends up running in November? You'll vote for them no matter who they are. If you're a Republican or independent, what are your thoughts on the field of candidates? Are you paying attention yet or trying to avoid election fatigue 2020? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Ginger Gibson is a political correspondent for Reuters. Ginger, good to have you back.
Thanks for having me. Glad to be back.
We'll tackle that debate in just a bit. But today, the House taking its final formal steps to finally send the two articles of impeachment against the president to the Senate. I want to give a listen to House Speaker Nancy Pelosi announcing that move this morning.
Today, on the floor, we'll pass a resolution naming the managers, as I mentioned, appropriating the funds for the trial and transmitting the articles of impeachment of the president of the United States for trying to influence a foreign government for his own personal and political benefit.
Pelosi had held on to these articles for almost a month, is now ready to send them over. Can you shed some light, Ginger, on the timing? Why now?
It's a great question. Pelosi has said she did it in order to bring more public attention to the need to have witnesses during the Senate trial, that she was trying to make sure the public was aware of what the process was going to be. Others have speculated that she was trying to get the process out of the Christmas lull when the public pays less attention, or at least have some ability to negotiate with the Senate about how they were going to proceed and whether they would have witnesses. I suspect in the grand scheme of things, this delay will matter very little. Voters aren't going to be looking, 10 months from now during the election and say, well, why did Nancy Pelosi wait 3 weeks? It's just a little bit of procedure intrigue inside the Beltway, I suspect.
When is the Senate expected to actually sit down and start tackling this stuff, assuming everything goes as planned, it gets walked over today?
Yeah, I just got an email from Senator Mitch McConnell's office explaining that they will begin tomorrow to formally review these articles of impeachment. We understand that the House managers had planned to walk them over. McConnell's office is saying that once they are notified, they have to set the time in order to read them, and that time is going to be set on Thursday. So the formal process will kick off, it seems, Thursday when that reading takes place.
Some new news coming out now that some House Democrats are saying should add fuel to the fire in the Senate. We have Lev Parnas, an associate of the president's personal lawyer, Rudy Giuliani. Parnas facing campaign finance charges. Now, a judge allowed him to turn over documents to the House Intelligence Committee related to his work in Ukraine. That's getting a lot of buzz over the last day or so. What kind of things are we seeing there?
We're seeing more concerns coming from House Democrats, particularly about these documents. They have released these messages that were exchanged between Rudy Giuliani's associates, people who were close to him and who were working, we understand, behind the scenes to try to pressure the Ukrainians to investigate President Trump's political rivals. There's now concern that these messages reveal that former Ambassador Maria Yovanovitch might have been in danger at some point, that there were threats being made against her. However, the individual who was making those threats now claims he was drunk. I think he was suggesting that it was a joke. But this is quickly not becoming a joking matter, and we see more discussion about what was going on behind the scenes by Trump's allies when this was all unfolding.
This is newer information now, just got to the House Democrats over the last week or so. Do we have any indication from the Senate as to whether they're going to end up looking at new information, how they're going to resolve this question of do they take more witnesses or not?
It remains to be undetermined whether or not they would take witnesses, either new folks like John Bolton, who we haven't heard from in this process, or any of the witnesses that testified during the House proceedings. There's a real political risk on both sides of this, whether or not they take witnesses. You know, McConnell wants this to be dispatched with quickly. He doesn't want a lot of fanfare. He doesn't want the Senate to be made into a circus. But he also knows, and he's hearing from his members who are up for re-election this year, that there's a risk if they move too quickly, if they don't give this something of an actual hearing and actually consider some of the evidence, that voters will punish those members for feeling like they just moved through the process and didn't actually weigh any of the evidence.
Talking to Ginger Gibson from Reuters, looking at some of the top stories in the week in national politics. We'll be turning to the Democratic debates in just a moment. You can join with your thoughts on the ongoing Democratic primary at 800-642-1234. Ginger, let's turn to that debate now. What stood out to you of this now smaller field of Democrats who reached the standards to show up on stage last night?
That's right. We had six Democrats on stage last night. We've come a long way from the summer when they had 20 Democrats split over two nights. And that meant that we got to hear a little bit more from each of the candidates. They had longer time to speak. They were able to have longer discussions on single topics. But it wasn't particularly explosive. There was quite a bit of good-natured back and forth. There was some disagreements on Iran, on past Iraq war votes, on how the United States should move forward on trade. And then, of course, there was the moment between Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren, in which Bernie Sanders was asked about reports that he had told Elizabeth Warren in a 2018 meeting that he did not believe a woman could beat Donald Trump.
Let's give a listen to Elizabeth Warren also responding to a similar question about that alleged statement. Here's Senator Warren.
This question about whether or not a woman can be president has been raised, and it's time for us to attack it head on. And I think the best way to talk about who can win is by looking at people's winning record. So can a woman beat Donald Trump? Look at the men on this stage. Collectively, they have lost 10 elections. The only people on this stage who have won every single election that they've been in are the women, Amy and me.
What do you make of how Elizabeth Warren handled that issue?
You know, she's been given a lot of praise last night and today for how she responded, that the answer was clearly making the case that a woman can get elected, that it was sort of jokingly disparaging the men on the stage. And it was sort of handling this controversy quickly and moving on and sort of not dwelling on it, turning it into a bigger picture, making it more Trump focused. I think that, you know, there's a lot to be said about what all of these little flashpoints in an election can mean for the election, and what Bernie Sanders said 2 years ago, probably not going to have a huge impact on the election, but how he handles this, how Elizabeth Warren handles this now, the tone of their responses could have some impact. Those are the things that voters are watching. And so a lot of praise for her today that she handled that well, and that she appeared to put forward a strong case for women while not getting sort of bogged down in the controversy.
You mentioned that foreign policy, Iran and the Middle East came up. Let's give a listen to former Vice President Joe Biden.
We have lost our standing in the region. We have lost the support of our allies. The next president has to be able to pull those folks back together, reestablish our alliances, and insist that Iran go back into the agreement.
What other kinds of things did we hear from the field on the Iran issue?
Yeah, we saw the candidates weighing in on Iran. They were quite critical of the way President Trump is handling Iran, the way you've handled the decision to kill General Soleimani, and how he's handled general relationships with Iran. Many of the people on stage supported the Iran nuclear deal. We saw Amy Klobuchar talking about how she had worked on it while as a senator in the role that the Senate was advising, and that they thought that that deal should be restored, that the way to move forward was diplomatic relations and not military. And we saw Bernie Sanders and Joe Biden having this back and forth about their Iraq war vote. And Bernie Sanders arguing, as someone who opposed the Iraq war, he would be able to sort of negotiate to approach this issue through diplomatic tactics and not through more military action.
healthcare is still a big issue, and it's been a big issue for Democrats in the primary. What came out last night? Anything new from the candidates on the stage?
We have heard these candidates talking about healthcare from day one, and we know that voters view this as one of their top issues, so they're not going to stop talking about it. But we did hear much of the same debate that we had already heard. Candidates arguing in favor of either big, sweeping, systemic, overarching changes of the U.S. healthcare system, getting rid of insurance entirely, having a whole new government-run system. That was the argument being made by folks like Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren. And then we saw Pete Buttigieg and Joe Biden and Amy Klobuchar arguing for a more measured approach, taking the system that we have now, building upon Obamacare. There was a back and forth between Elizabeth Warren and Pete Buttigieg over whether their plans were the right approach. And Elizabeth Warren saying that Pete Buttigieg just didn't want to spend enough money, that he wasn't being too cheap to cover everyone. And Buttigieg arguing that Washington is wrong to measure plans and proposals by how much they cost, and that there are ways to approach the U.S. health system to improve it without taking on the kind of spending that Elizabeth Warren wants to.
Talking to Ginger Gibson, political correspondent for Reuters, looking at the week in national politics. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Did you watch the Democratic primary debate last night? What stood out to you? What issue, what statement, which candidate? Do you plan on voting for one of them if they're still in the running by the time it comes to Wisconsin? What are you watching for in Iowa? For our Iowa listeners, what are you looking forward to with this caucus? Do you have a candidate in mind? If you're watching this from outside the Democratic Party, if you're an independent or a Republican, what do you make of the candidates and what they have to say? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our talk with Ginger Gibson, political correspondent for Reuters, about some of the week's top stories in national politics. Let's bring in a caller on one of the issues we've talked about so far. Nate is with us in Milwaukee. Nate, hi.
Hi. Thank you for having me. With the information that's been coming out more recently, I think it further shows how Trump is guilty. And if you look back at that phone call with the Ukrainian president, just count up the number of times he brought up Giuliani's name and consider that Giuliani was basically trying to be there to push an unethical act. And what came out really reinforces that. The Republicans claimed back in the House they wanted more witnesses. I took a look at the witnesses they wanted. For some strange reason, Giuliani and Mulvaney never showed up on that list, but I think they really would take away the argument, if they did, that Democrats were just assuming things because they would be able to say what they were doing.
Nate, thanks for the call. And that's something Democrats are bringing up. They want some names out there to connect some of the dots from the president to Rudy Giuliani to the people he was working with in Ukraine.
That's right. We know that the Democrats have argued that these folks should still testify, that there are still things that they could clarify for the American public, that there are questions that they could answer. We also heard President Trump early in this process argue that once the impeachment got into the Senate, once there was a Senate trial, that it was his turf, that his allies would be running the show, and that it would be a time for his witnesses to come forward and redeem him, to prove that the Democrats were wrong. The president appears to have abandoned that position, and it was a position we know that Mitch McConnell thought was not wise. So the president tweeted over the weekend that instead he thought that the Senate should just dismiss the whole thing and not even hold a trial. We know that the Senate is unlikely to do that. But there was talk at one point that these witnesses, someone like Mick Mulvaney, could be called to testify essentially in the president's favor and as something that the president thought would be a net positive for him.
Thanks a lot for that call. We've got a caller with a question about the Iowa caucuses now, I think. Frank is with us in La Crosse. Frank, hi.
Yeah, I was curious. How does the Democratic caucus work if a Trump supporter shows up and wants to speak? Are they allowed to? Are they asked to leave? What happens that situation.
Frank, thanks for the call. My understanding, Ginger, is you in the Iowa caucuses can vote in a caucus for the party in which you are registered. So it's not so easy to cross parties to vote on the other side.
That's right. You have to be registered. They have a closed caucus in Iowa, so Republicans and independents can't show up and participate. Now, that's not to say there aren't Trump voters who are registered as Democrats in Iowa, and they could show up. But I haven't been in a number of caucuses. I can tell you they're a little more organized than just anyone being able to get up and speak. The precinct captains are organizing speakers. There's a speaker at the beginning and then a speaker in the middle. And it's not sort of the free-for-all that I think some people think the Iowa caucuses are. So if someone started shouting in favor of President Trump, I think they would probably be asked to leave or made to leave very quickly.
Frank, thanks for that call. And Frank brings us to now the next big event. The official debates are done for now, and some kind of voting is coming up. What are people watching for now, Ginger, in Iowa?
I think in Iowa, they're going to be watching very closely to see who the top three or four candidates are. As the cliche goes, there are three tickets out of Iowa, maybe four this time, depending on how closely grouped together they are. If you want to sound smart next time we're talking about Iowa and the caucuses, point out the fact that there's a 15% threshold that candidates have to meet in order to be considered viable and to get delegates. So someone like Amy Klobuchar, who's polling around 8%, could come in fifth place and get no delegates. Also, after the first vote at these caucuses are taken, if a candidate doesn't have 15% in that caucus, their supporters then have to realign or pick another candidate. And that could mean someone like Klobuchar could have a lot of influence based on where her voters go and who they pick as a second choice.
Iowa is important, but the winner of Iowa doesn't necessarily go on to win the overall campaign, it looks like. Do I have that right?
That's right. We saw last cycle Hillary Clinton barely beat out Bernie Sanders. She did win that win. Barack Obama won the Iowa caucuses in 2008. He won that nomination. So it happens a little more often on the Democratic side that the winner of Iowa goes on to win the entire nomination, less so on the Republican side. Ted Cruz won the Iowa caucuses in 2016. But it should be clear that whoever does win Iowa isn't a sure bet. There's going to be quite a bit more contest after that. New Hampshire will be an important test, South Carolina and Nevada, and then on to Super Tuesday. So there's a lot between Iowa and the convention that the ultimate nominee is going to have to prevail on.
Talking to Ginger Gibson, political correspondent for Reuters, looking at some of the top news in national politics. Turning to non-impeachment news in Congress, Ginger, President Trump's decision to kill Iranian military commander Soleimani got some pushback from members of Congress who weren't part of that decision. Now we have this Democratic-led resolution to limit the president's war powers coming up in the Senate. What are we looking at here?
We are looking at a vote in the Senate, likely, that would try to limit how much action President Trump could take in the region without war powers authorization by Congress. If you remember, back to high school civics, the power to declare war is invested in Congress. President Trump has contended that the existing authorizations dealing with terrorism in the Middle East are all the approval he's needed from Congress in order to act, particularly since that action he was taking was in Iraq. Members of Congress have become less comfortable with this in recent years. There was a War Powers Act that was passed by Congress under President Obama that limited some of the actions that could be taken in the region. And now we see a growing bipartisan support to limit what President Trump could do. Now, let's be clear, we don't yet see enough support between Democrats and Republicans in the Senate and or the House to override a veto, which we would expect from President Trump. But we are likely to see this vote. We are likely to see, now they're talking about four, maybe five Republicans crossing over and voting with Democrats on a resolution that Senator Kaine has authored that would limit the president's powers.
Are people talking about this even if it passes but gets vetoed? Are supporters saying this would at least be a symbolic message to President Trump and maybe even future presidents about their war authority?
Absolutely. So the previous legislation that was passed and a veto overridden, presidents have contended that it was unconstitutional. It still remains in place. They haven't actually managed to sort of get it thrown out. And they'll continue to make this argument about future resolutions, but it does send a message, and it does let the country know, particularly people that are opposed to an escalating war, that Congress is paying attention, that they are voicing some concern, and it is symbolic in many ways. Presidents need public opinion to go to war. It's very difficult to launch a war without the support of your country, and it does send a message to the administration that they have not made a convincing enough case at this point to gain that public support.
Well, lots of big news this week. Ginger, briefly as we wrap up, what is your eye on in the next week to come?
And the next week is going to be impeachment, impeachment, impeachment. The trial is going to kick off in the Senate. It's really going to be rolling. We're going to have the House managers presenting their argument. President Trump likely to have his aides, his lawyers out defending him. And the overlap with the election, there are three senators who are running for president that will be there participating, Senator Warren, Senator Klobuchar, Senator Sanders, and what roles they play and how they continue to try to campaign in Iowa while stuck in Washington.
Ginger, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Ginger Gibson is a political correspondent for Reuters. She joined us for a weekly look at some of the latest news in national politics.